Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Great. We're talking to the citizen lobbyist, and it's a little bit of a rainy day today.
It is quite a rainy day, coming down pretty good here in Palmer.
Yes, this is good, but the good news is it will have stopped by about 10:30. Of course, we're going to see a little more through the week. Well, this has been an interesting week. You have done a little bit of traveling, I understand.
Yeah, I got to go to Juneau day before yesterday. It was a beautiful day in Juneau. It's one of those days that might easily convince you that you could live there every day, because there's really hard to find a prettier place than being in Juneau on a really beautiful day. It was quite filled up with tourists, lots of people there. I don't think there was more than a couple of ships, but there were certainly lots of people. And boy, the airports were jammed too, Mike. So
oh, really?
I think that it's fair to say that Alaska's having a really good tourist season.
So was this a visit? I'm noticing, as you say, that there were a lot of tourists there. The suggestion is that although state government is there and people continue to work, legislators were not there.
They're not there, but
go ahead.
I'm hearing rumors that they're planning, that everybody's talking about them perhaps being back for a special session in October.
Ah.
So I don't know if that has firmed up, but I heard it from a couple of different fairly reliable sources. So we will see. They are going to take up, you know, revenue measures or exactly what's going to be on the agenda. But it would seem that that would be short and sweet if that were the case, because they'll want to get on with the holidays. So I don't know
right.
if that, have you heard that too, Mike?
I have asked the question of people who would be among the first to know, and I don't think, at least at this point, the decision has been made and shared with anyone. But hear more of the direction that, or looking at the possibilities that would sort of make sense, and so we'll just have to wait and see. I did float another idea though, and I'll share it with you too, and say, you know, maybe one of the problems, the reasons why there's such a difficulty with the legislative sessions, it appears more recently, is they start in January and go to May. And I thought, given what you have just said, people want to finish things up typically if they're having meetings before holidays. What about changing this session and not start in January, but start, say, in August or September and run through December, so that people will get done before Christmas? Rather, you know, change that around a little bit. Maybe that would break the logjam.
Well, that's a possibility. But then, you know, we also get into a lot of weather difficulties getting in and out of Juneau. So a lot of them get there by ferry.
Right.
So there may be some weather restrictions on that. In fact, yesterday when I was at the airport in Anchorage, somebody pointed out that all the Kodiak flights had been already canceled that day, which made the airport even fuller because of the fog and not being able to get into Kodiak. And when I left Juneau yesterday, both of the flights were having some difficulty there getting in and out because the jetways broke on two of the airplanes. So, you know, there's all those things too. So it may be more of a weather restriction, but, you know, if they did do it during that time, and you know, maybe if just voters held their feet to the fire more about the 90-day session, they'd all want to come home for Christmas. So maybe you're on to something, Mike, but hard to say.
Yeah,
so when a good
just
time
is, something that would change what appears to be a slipping into a pattern. How to shake up that pattern, and it could be as simple as, yeah, go down there in January, but actually change the work week to be a 7-day work week and spread that out, and don't go traveling around, and have some very, you know, we're going to stay in this room until we finish this particular piece mm-hmm. type of situations. And
well, one thing that has been floated from time again, and there are some states that actually do this, they have talked about having a budget every other year. And so one year they you know, take up nothing but the budget, and the next year they do emergency bills would have to be done. But most of the bills and that sort of thing would be on the other year that the budget isn't taking up. And that would be worth maybe a conversation, too.
Well, how about go down that road a bit further? How about meeting every other year?
Well, there's some legislators that do that. I think Wyoming is one that only meets, and I think the Texas legislature only works every other year, too. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm such a proponent of that, because I think government shouldn't really always be a rushed process, but that, you know, things come up in an emerging state like ours with a lot of needs and a lot of challenges that come up that maybe I have a feeling we would end up having just a series of special sessions. So personally, unless I see otherwise, I'm okay with them meeting every year, but I think they need to have a little more structure in what they do and a little more feet to their fire in actually getting their job done, particularly since so many of them are critical of the job that our schools do and, you know, how they perform, and that they should be doing a better job. I think we should get that same thing out of our legislature. So we'll see how that works out.
So and when you bring that up, I'm curious. I know that obviously we have the ultimate observation and evaluation that comes through voting. And we also have a lot of people evaluating the legislature's activities along the way, whether you're in the media or out of the media or wherever, commenting. But I was wondering whether you're aware of whether the legislature has any self-evaluation that they do. Bring in, for example, someone who would be a facilitator and taking a look, whether it's the Senate or the House, and saying, okay, how did we do this year? Not patting themselves on the back because they're a particular party and they pass certain things, but how is our, just looking at their process, how did this process work? And I'm pretty adamant that this very often requires an outside facilitator who is neutral, who will help them actually look at their process and separate that out from accomplishments or specific bills and say, is this process working for us?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's always a difference between self-evaluation and outside evaluation. And I know there is an organization, it escapes me the name of it, that goes around and it's actually done with the public that actually judges the judges and how they do, sits in their courtrooms and gives them a scorecard of, you know, how they think they're performing their duties. And, you know, it's not such a reach to think that we couldn't do that with our legislature. There are some industries that give the legislature a report card. The oil companies come to mind, but mostly that's a judgment on how favorably those legislatures are to their issues. But, you know, to have some type of a public run that could afford to go to Juneau now and again or, you know, now with gavel to gavel, you don't even really have to leave your own home, but who kind of kept track on individual legislators' performances, how much, what they passed, how they did it, how messy the process was, how valuable the legislation was, would be kind of interesting. It even would be interesting right now to have a scorecard of legislators who are down there and how many bills they've passed and what impact that had to the state as it is. I think it would be quite an eye opener if somebody would do the research.
Well, and of course there's the other part about this, which it seems occasionally to pop up and bother the general population, is that when we, other than the voting that happens as a mechanism for evaluating and giving ultimate feedback, the legislature can sort of exempt itself, as long as it doesn't go down the illegal road too far and get judicial oversight working on them, for example, ignore or set its own interpretation of things. And there's that in some ways, there's a sense that the legislature feels above, they are the law because they create the law, and therefore the Open Meetings Act and things of that sort. Well, that's for others, not for us. And I think there's that sense that maybe not every legislator feels, but again, how do you put the the legislators' feet to the fire other than waiting for 2 years or 4 years and voting someone out of office?
Mm-hmm. Well, put a little sunlight on it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's what we try to do. Yeah.
Yep. So we try to do.
Okay. Well, there go ahead.
Oh, so did you attend the City of Palmer meeting this week, Mike?
I did. And in fact, it's just up on the website so that someone can listen to it. And I can describe quickly. There were some interesting reports. And very often when we have a short agenda, and this was a short agenda, although the meeting went from 7 to well after 10 p.m., you think, well, there's not going to be much here. But the reports were interesting. John Lee, for example, who's chair of the Aviation Advisory Board, gave a report on the airport and its work. It's being worked. And he was pretty laudatory. I mean, he thought they were doing a very good job with something that was necessary. And for those listeners who are not aware, in addition to having the council and obviously the administration and the City of Palmer, there are these various boards and commissions, and the aviation group has some pretty heavy hitters. John Lee, a very, very prominent person with New Horizons out there at the airport and a pilot of great experience. You have a lot of people that contribute to the strategic plans, et cetera, that happen and make many of these operations operate so well. So for the listener, the airport is apparently on track for its renovation, and you'll notice changes if you're, and in fact, we were sitting in our backyard, and we're located about a half mile from the west end of the crosswind runway, and sure enough, a twin-engine aircraft came over our house and did a little dogleg to land, and we rarely have in the past seen or heard aircraft particularly coming right over the house. And so people may notice changed patterns as the main runway has been closed, crosswind has been used. That will be closing up too for a bit as they complete the work, and then everything will open up and we'll be back to what was a normal pattern. A lot of people have been asking about, whoa, what's happening? It seems, you know, when you talk about repaving the runway, you would think, oh, it's just the runway, they're going to repave it. But what they're actually doing is extending a number of the side areas to remove trees that pose a potential hazard and so on, particularly to the east of the airport. Anyone driving along there, crossing over toward the Butte, will notice many, many trucks coming and moving a lot of earth one way or the other as they work on that. But that's a big deal, $10 million, and it's going to be completed here in the next few weeks.
Well, it would seem that they're very lucky to have somebody like John Lee, who actually has a business out there and has a pulse on it every day, to be kind of leading up that commission to give them sort of a, you know, in-depth view of what's going on. And it's a voluntary position. He doesn't get paid to do it. So bravo. I'll be anxious to hear that.
Right. Then after the various reports, they moved into a committee of the whole, which occupied a good portion of the meeting. And there were two people prominent who gave reports. The city manager, Nate Wallace, did the longest one. And what the intention of having that discussion was to look ahead as you know, and listeners may know, the City of Palmer's budget is worked on and completed by December of each year. It's a calendar-based budget. And at this point, what they're doing is reviewing what's happening in this year's budget as compared to previous years, getting a sense of the future, any large factors that would be affecting the budget considerations, and being able to talk about directions and so on as the manager, as typically does, prepares a budget and then has that discussion with the council as they finalize it in December. So they covered a lot of ground there. And the summary basically was that things were looking pretty good. There were a few areas they were looking at in terms of use of money for one thing or another. But the City of Palmer has a pretty steady way of doing things. And as a result, there aren't a lot of spikes up and down. Sales tax obviously provides a large portion of the income. and things seem to be working reasonably well in that regard.
So, yeah, interestingly enough, Mike, I was looking up the documents for that particular meeting, and if folks do go to the City of Palmer website and look, the clerk does a really good job
yes.
putting information up there, and one of the items that they can find under the meetings is documents placed on the table. And one of the items that was placed on the table for the Committee of the Whole is a graph and a spreadsheet that concerns the 218 budget. It's 8 pages long. It's pretty interesting. There's a lot of criticism I hear of people not thinking there's enough transparency in governing. And this has some pretty, numbers in there that are pretty transparent as to do with what they're spending it on, what's been budgeted, what their actual spend is, and what their projected spend is. And I think if you look just at their police and public works graphs between 2013 and 2017, yeah, it is pretty consistent. There are a few things that are even lower than they used to be. Things like the police budget is a little bit lower than it was. So, you know, it is very consistent, and that it gives you sort of a graphic on what you were talking about, Mike, about sort of slow and steady
right.
As they go. They did show that, you know, benefits, regular and part-time, have gone down, actually substantial from 2015 to 2016. So wages are a little less. We're paying a little less in government wages and benefits than they were. And I think that is probably due to a change that they made in their health program around that time, where the city employees were asked to pay a little bit more as health costs went up. So really interesting, and I encourage people to download it because it does give you sort of some bird's eye view of the expenditures. You know, it has to do with, sales and on property and our personnel costs and all those other things people have sometimes rushed to judgment about, and they can have a little more research if they look at this. So
right.
good piece of information to have.
And there was one other topic that was very interesting from my perspective, and that had to do with a brief discussion around, and this was part of the manager's report, around plastic bags. And the question that is going to be addressed in part is to ban or to tax. And apparently there was a brief reference to the city of Wasilla, which may be considering just simply banning plastic bags. And of course, the borough has its action, and they're considering. But in the process, they brought up a concept which was people have heard, but maybe did not fully understand, and that was what an excise tax is. Because when we're talking about the ways in which you would tax plastic bags, the reference was to an excise tax. And the attorney gave a brief beginning explanation of it, and I had a chance to review, to take a look at excise taxes, and in fact, I even spoke to that, it's on the recording, because what is interesting about an excise tax is that it is very different than a sales tax. And one major difference is that the proceeds from that excise tax can pretty much be dedicated. There's a little bit of fuzziness about it, but for example, and I use the example of the work that's being done on the runway here. Money comes from the federal government. FAA provides funds. A large portion of the $10 million came from the federal government. And so where did that money typically come from? Well, when you traveled to Juneau and you paid for a ticket, you didn't have necessarily a sales tax on there. You had an excise tax that was mm-hmm. wrapped up in the total that was paid.
Mm-hmm.
But although this is passed on, in a sense, to you, it is actually not paid directly by you, but it's paid by the provider, the distributor of the service, and that money goes into an aviation fund. And that was somewhere in an amount of $14 or $15 billion that was collected in the past year, some of which money, I'm going to guess, if you followed the money, came back here to Palmer for this airport.
Mm.
So an excise tax is secondly somewhat hidden because it isn't paid by the consumer. So if you had plastic bags, as I understand it, and I'm willing to be corrected on this, as I understand it, if Fred Meyer, for example, were to continue to have plastic bags in the city of Palmer, put an excise tax on it, it would mean that when Fred Meyer purchased the bags, they would pay a sum to the city. But and they could pass that on. They could sell the bags. They could do whatever included in their pricing. But you wouldn't be necessarily buying the plastic bags at 10 cents a piece or something, or whatever they...
Well, unless they decide to charge for it, right?
Right. But that would be not a tax. The tax would have been paid by Fred Meyer to the city.
Well, I think the other difference, and this may not just really be the difference between excise and sales, but it's a user fee, really. I'm sort of sad that they're calling it a tax because tax has such a bad taste in everybody's mouth. But to me, it's really a user's fee because it's multiple choice. I mean, you don't have to go to the store empty-handed. You can bring your own bag. There's no they're not going to tax you to use your own bag. It's there for people that, you know, choose not to bring their own bag. And it helps, and if it's done right, it helps mitigate the cost of what that bag means out there in the community, not only to Fred Meyer having to stock them and, supply them and that sort of thing, but it also to the communities that have to put up with the residue from it and, the impact to the landfill and not to mention blowing around the streets and having to do cleanup and that sort of thing.
So it's an
interesting discussion that we're having right now, you know, at the borough level, and it's interesting the city is having it because a lot of the cities are saying just ban them. We don't want to have anything to do with
them. Sure, and that might be a simplest, cleanest way to do it.
It is, but you have to be careful what you're banning because you have to... Apparently, there's a couple of different types of forms of plastic bags,
right?
And you want to make sure you're banning all plastic bags so that the only choice is paper bags, and you don't end up with just a little more durable plastic bag. That's one of them, but that is an option to do.
Sure.
And it'll be interesting to see. It sounds like the from my conversations with the mayor of Wasilla, he's talked about that. We have to talk about that. So I'm glad that it's an awareness, that people are having an awareness of having it. It's also interesting to hear the people that say they're totally against it. They people shouldn't have to pay for their plastic bags. But, again, not knowing the whole story and the impact to what happens to that plastic bag, people might be a little more on board if they knew that.
Well, we'll see how that proceeds. It's going to be an interesting.
How did it end with the council? Are they entertaining the thought? Or are they?
Well, it's the beginning of discussion, and really, the manager was just giving a report that he was beginning to gather information to talk about this. I think it's going to be a little bit before any action is taken by the council.
If the borough does it borough wide,
well, the city's still, I think, within that We'll look toward how the borough is going to deal with
it.
They have a bigger discussion and seem to be closer to it and all the rest.
Yeah.
Always
interesting, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for calling in today. This has been a great discussion, and I look forward to talking a little bit more about events at Valley Edition tomorrow. We're entering the zone where some things are heating up. Both the assembly and the school board will be meeting next week, and we'll see
I did want to mention that on the borough election in October, that the slate of candidates has changed a little bit, and now there's only two members running for the Wasilla seat. Applicant Colleen Begg has dropped out, it looks like. So now there are only two people running for that, so not likely to have a three-way split there.
Very interesting.
And again, there's still time for somebody to do a write-in, but at this point, there's two for that seat. Oddly enough, there are three people running for Wasilla mayor. So maybe we can talk about that, too.
Okay. Well, with that, thank you again, Citizen Lobbyist. Have a good day. I noticed, as we're doing this in the morning, the sun is breaking through. And
I see that.
Yes, there's hope for the future. Take care now.
Yes. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.